Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, September 14th, 2022. Coming up this hour.
Futures rise following the worst day for stocks in 2 years.
Positive inflation data in the UK as prices slip from 40-year highs.
In London, Queen Elizabeth's coffin makes its way to Buckingham Palace.
And a rail strike in the U.S. threatens to halt shipments of farm products and autos.
Former New York Governor Cuomo files an ethics complaint against the AG. Plus, Ukrainian troops keep up the pressure on fleeing Russian forces. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Another big night for Aaron Judge. Two home runs and the Yankee win over the Red Sox. The Mets lost again to the Cubs.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. futures are on the rise this morning. We are coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 24 points this morning, Dow futures up 153, and NASDAQ futures up 78. 10-year Treasury down 6/32, yield 3.43%, and the yield on the 2-year at 3.76%. Nathan.
Well, Karen, stocks are coming off their worst day since 2020. The S&P 500 dropped 4.3%, while the NASDAQ plunged more than 5%. It was all fueled by hotter-than-expected inflation data, which is increasing bets for bigger rate hikes from the Fed. Carol Schleif is Deputy Chief Investment Officer at BMO Family Office.
The market desperately wants to figure out a bullish tone, and they've been fighting the Fed all year. And the Fed's been unequivocal, saying we're going to, you know, they communicated pretty clearly that it's a 3/4 of basis point rise. And I think this number took everybody by surprise, but the data's been really sloppy month to month.
Carol Schleif at BMO Family Office says next week's Fed meeting will be crucial for markets.
Well, Nathan, the sell-off spread to Asia overnight, but the price action was more muted than what we saw in the U.S. Japan's Nikkei dropped 2.8%, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng fell 2.5%. We get the recap from Bloomberg's Juliet Sally in Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Karen. The yen rallied further away from the closely watched 145 per dollar level after the Nikkei reported the Bank of Japan conducted a so-called rate check in the currency market, a move considered a precursor for intervention. Officials in South Korea also ramped up verbal intervention, while China's central bank sent the daily reference rate on the yuan at the strongest bias on record. Asian stocks had their biggest drop since June intraday, with Australian Chinese tech stocks and Japanese shares the laggards. In Sydney, Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thanks. As inflation and higher rates continue to weigh on markets, the Fed still has a long way to go. That's according to legendary investor Mark Mobius, who says the Fed's benchmark interest rate could hit 9%.
Their game plan is to make sure that the interest rate is higher than inflation. That's the way they believed the way to kill inflation. So you have 8% CPI. That means you have to have 9% interest rates.
If that forecast from Mark Mobius is right, rates would climb significantly higher than the current 2.5% target rate.
Well, Nathan, the broad-based sell-off is putting more pressure on the Fed to keep up aggressive policy. But when it comes to politics, President Biden says he's not worried about the threat of inflation.
The stock market doesn't necessarily reflect the state of the economy, as you well know. And the economy's still strong, unemployment's low, jobs are up, manufacturing's good. So I think it's I think we're going to be fine.
Are you worried about the inflation number, though, sir?
No, I'm not.
The president spoke after hosting a celebration at the White House for the Inflation Reduction Act. After those remarks, Bloomberg political contributor Rick Davis said Democrats are starting to look out of touch on the economy.
It's just they cannot get out of their own way. This is a ad ready to be made. Every Republican is going to have this in their quiver. And frankly, they give back Republicans a message that was starting to dwindle, which is, oh, my God, we've got to quit talking about inflation. Well, not now.
Rick Davis spoke with our Washington correspondent Joe Matthew on Bloomberg Sound On. Catch the program weekdays at 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio.
In the U.K., Karen, there's some slightly positive news on inflation. Prices have gone down a bit, easing off the highest rate in 4 decades. Today's consumer price index rose at an annual rate of 9.9%. That's a drop from 10.1 in July. The Bank of England meets next week. It's expected to raise interest rates either 50 or 75 basis points.
Well, Nathan, the bigger story in England right now centers on Queen Elizabeth II. Her coffin is now at Buckingham Palace as people queue up to pay their respects to the Queen. And we go live to London and get the latest from Bloomberg's Ewan Potts. Ewan, good morning.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Queen Elizabeth is set to leave Buckingham Palace today for the very last time. Departing at 2:22 p.m, Her Majesty's coffin will be transported by horse-drawn gun carriage through St James's Park and on to Westminster. Walking behind his mother's coffin will be the new King, King Charles III, followed by other senior members of the royal family. The Queen's coffin will lie in state in Westminster Hall, the ancient heart of the British Parliament, for 4 days until her funeral on Monday. As many as 1 million people are expected to join the line to walk past her casket. In London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ewan, thank you. Geopolitics is also in focus this morning. President Xi Jinping is making his first trip outside China in more than 2 years. It gives him a chance to meet Vladimir Putin in person for the first time since Russia began its invasion of Ukraine. We get more from Bloomberg's Stephen Engel in Hong Kong.
Obviously, for Putin, he needs China's support. Perhaps the war, according to many calculations, is not going as planned. And for, you know, Xi Jinping, he is, again, steadfastly sticking to this plan of decentralizing Western institutions and creating a narrative from a Chinese perspective.
Bloomberg's Stephen Engel reports Xi and Putin meet tomorrow in Uzbekistan on the sidelines of a security forum. First, President Xi makes a stop in Kazakhstan today.
And back here in the U.S., Nathan, a big labor fight is making headlines. A strike set for tomorrow could prevent American railroads from transporting farm products and other key goods and could cost the U.S. economy $2 billion a day. President Biden is personally trying to break the logjam between railroads and labor unions. Labor Secretary Marty Walsh will meet with railroad and union representatives today.
Futures moving higher, Karen. We have S&P futures up 25 points right now after yesterday's rout. Dow futures up 161. NASDAQ futures on the rise by 83 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 7/32, the yield 3.43%. NYMEX crude is up 0.4% or 31 cents at 87.62 a barrel. The euro just below parity against the dollar. Local headlines and a check of sports just ahead. This is Bloomberg. At 5:07 on Wall Street, we're at 65 degrees in Central Park. Got a water main break. It's got southbound Route 202 closed by Henry Street in Morristown. More coming up in traffic. First, Michael Barr with what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo filed an ethics complaint against State Attorney General Letitia James about the way she handled a sexual harassment investigation that led to his resignation last year. Cuomo questioned the accuracy and credibility of the investigation findings, alleging James, a fellow Democrat, used the probe to tarnish him and further her own political interests. Cuomo says James, who briefly ran for governor, had her own politically motivated and self-interest-driven agenda. Cuomo resigned in August of last year. Rhode Island Governor Dan McKee won Tuesday's Democratic gubernatorial primary. He thanked supporters.
So I am so honored to stand here before you tonight, not just as your governor, but as the Democratic nominee for governor of Rhode Island.
Governor McKee got the most with 33%. In the fall, McKee will face Republican Ashley Kellis, who got 84%. In New Hampshire, the Republican contest for Senate remains a tight race between conservative Donald Baldock and the more moderate Chuck Morse. Republicans see Democratic incumbent Senator Maggie Hassan as beatable in the general election. Primaries were also held in Delaware. The mayor of Boston is thanking law enforcement for a speedy response last night after a package exploded on the campus of Northeastern University, injuring a staff member. The 45-year-old man suffered minor injuries to his hand and was taken to a local hospital. Mayor Michelle Wu.
I just want to thank all of our first responders for a very, very swift, coordinated, and effective response within minutes. Our police department and EMS and fire department were here.
Mayor Wu says the search revealed a second similar package that was ultimately rendered safe by the bomb squad. Ukrainian troops continue to pressure retreating Russian forces, pressing deeper into occupied territory and sending more Kremlin troops fleeing. Pentagon spokesman Brigadier General Pat Ryder on Russia.
Clearly, they've demonstrated their intent to keep fighting in Ukraine and to prolong their illegal occupation.
General Ryder. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. Almost 5:10 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stashower.
All right, good morning, Nathan. Aaron Boone was asked last night to describe Aaron Judge's performance in this remarkable season. He said, "I have run out of adjectives." In Boston, Judge hit a solo home run in the sixth inning to tie the game at three, and then he came up two innings later.
The 1-1.
Swung on, there it goes. Deep left field, it is high. It is far. It has gone out of the building. Over the high green monster, over the monster seats, out onto Lansbone. He is phenomenal. The second home run of the night for Judge, his 57th of the year, and we're all tied at four.
WFAN game is still 4-4, 10th inning, when Gleyber Torres delivered a three-run double. The Red Sox got two back. Bottom of the 10th, but Wandy Peralta struck out Rafi Devers. The Yanks held on to win 7-6. It's the 10th multi-home run game of the season for Judge. The record is 11. Hank Greenberg, 1938. And with 57 homers, he is inching closer to Roger Maris's 61. At Citi Field, second straight Mets loss to the lowly Cubs, 4-1. A rare loss for Jacob deGrom, and the Mets didn't help by getting only four hits. In Atlanta, won 5-1 at San Francisco. The Braves are only a half game behind the Mets. Mike Trout did not homer for the Angels. He was trying to tie the record with a home run in eight straight games. The Twins against the Royals were two outs from a combined no-hitter. Didn't get it. WNBA playoffs, Las Vegas 85, Connecticut 71. Aces up 2-0. They can win the championship tomorrow at the Mohegan Sun. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. S&P futures up 21 points right now. Dow futures up 136. NASDAQ futures up 68 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 7/32. The yield 3.43%. Markets looking to make a little bit of recovery after yesterday's rout. We'll check in next with Esty Dweck, the Chief Investment Officer at FlowBank. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by PPAC Private Wealth Management. PPAC Private Wealth Management knows that a portfolio is more than a collection of assets. It's a path to your future. Visit PPACPrivate.com and begin your financial legacy today.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures rallying this morning after shares had their biggest drop in more than 2 years yesterday, with the S&P 500 falling more than 4% and the NASDAQ sliding more than 5%. A gauge of the dollar retreating after jumping the most in 3 months, and the 10-year Treasury yield is ticking higher, hovering near a decade peak. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are up 21 points, Dow futures up 128, and NASDAQ futures up 66. The DAX in Germany's down 0.3%. 10-year Treasury down 7/32. Yield 3.43%. The yield on the 2-year, 3.77%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.25% or 23 cents at $87.54 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.2% or $3.60 at $17.13.90 an ounce. The euro, 0.9991 against the dollar. British pound, 1.1540. The yen, 143.37. And looking at Bitcoin, it's up 0.5%. At $20,350. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Queen Elizabeth II's coffin has arrived at Buckingham Palace ahead of today's procession through London to Westminster Hall. She will lie in state for 4 days until her funeral. NBA team owner Robert Sarver is banned from representing the league in any capacity for 1 year. There are calls for tougher punishment for alleged racism and misogyny. In baseball, the Yankees beat the Red Sox 7-6 in 10 innings. New York's Aaron Judge hit two homers to reach 57 this season. The Mets lost. The Orioles beat the Nationals 4-3. The A's and Giants lost. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's 5:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Let's try to make sense of this market after yesterday's inflation read. Esty Dweck joins us live, Chief Investment Officer at FlowBank. Esty, good morning. We are seeing futures in a bit of recovery mode after yesterday's rout. Is this a dip you'd buy?
Not today, no. You know, we
We are going, I mean, we had a very big move yesterday, right? Down almost 4% across most indices. And we basically erased most of what happened last week. I think as we digest this, we'll see that maybe it was a little bit of an overreaction. But the fact that the August month-on-month print was positive and not negative was clearly a problem. And markets are now repricing a lot more rate hikes into the end of the year. And I think that's going to have an impact on markets for a couple more days.
Interesting that you term it a little bit of an overreaction. I mean, it was a 4.3% drop for the S&P 500, the most in more than 2 years. Can you sort of explain a little bit more why you think it might have been just a little bit of an overreaction rather than, it was a significant drop yesterday, Esty.
It was a very big drop yesterday, for sure. But if you think of it in the context of the previous few sessions where we'd had this big run-up in markets, basically expecting this softer inflation print, reversing a lot of that in one go was also maybe not as surprising. So I think that's why I'd say a bit of an overreaction. Some of the reaction is also, in a way, justified because the inflation prints are not coming down as fast as we'd like. Some of the stickier components are proving sticky, and that means that the Fed is far from being over. So we're also sort of depricing a little bit of that hope of a Fed pivot, even though Powell had already done a very good job at removing that expectation at Jackson Hole.
Oh, we were certainly seeing the market now removing that expectation of a pivot with swaps markets now fully pricing in 75 basis points. Let's get into that debate a little bit. What do you think the Fed's going to do next week?
I think they're going to do 75. The market is between 75 and 100, so clearly up from where we were just a couple of days or weeks ago. I think 100 could scare everyone. I think that they've done a couple of 75s. They know it takes 3 to 6 months for this to filter through into the economy. They're going to do 75. They're going to signal that they're going to keep going. So we already see that the 225s of November, December are getting repriced higher as well. I'm not sure 3, 4, 5 months in on one inflation print, when you have a lot of other data pointing towards disinflation, that 100 is the right signal.
What does it mean for stock valuations if we do get that 75 basis point move, or if the Fed potentially surprises and comes in even stronger?
I don't think the 75 surprises markets. It's priced in at this point. And, you know, even before the print, we were between 50 and 75. So we knew more hikes were coming. I think it's more about the terminal rate, which was, you know, may now be shifting to 4, 4.5 as an expectation for the end of the year. And then probably either more hikes at the beginning of next year or even shifting further back any rate cuts that markets still had priced in for the end of 2023. So from a valuation perspective, in the short term, not a huge move, even if we get 75. 100 scares markets a little more, so we get another drop there. But if we get the 75 and we get an indication that more is coming, I think a lot of that is priced in or will be priced in by next week.
So in our last minute here, Esty, what could the stronger Fed potentially mean for stock valuations? What could it mean for earnings expectations going forward for the rest of the year?
There was a view that earnings expectations had to dip for the end of the year and for 2023. They've proved relatively resilient. I think some of these prints are showing you that the earnings are going to stay relatively resilient. So that's not where I'd be more worried. I think you had a bond market that's saying inflation expectations are coming down, market expectations are coming down. Hopefully consumer expectations, we'll see on Friday what the Michigan survey says. So we need to see if those get completely repriced and if that has an impact on the equity market, because the equity market has been the more negative in terms of those of pricing in those tightening expectations so far.
Thanks for this, Esty. As always, great having you with us. Esty Gwek, Chief Investment Officer at Flow Bank. After the sell-off yesterday, we are seeing a bit of recovery in the futures contracts. We have S&P futures right now higher by 24 points. Dow futures are up 160. NASDAQ futures up 82 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 8/32, yield 3.43%. Yield on the 2-year, 3.77%. Crude's getting a bit of a lift this morning as well. We have NYMEX crude up 0.4% or 35 cents, $87.70 a barrel. The euro right now 0.9998 against the dollar. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And at 525 on Wall Street, Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by PPAC Private Wealth Management. A portfolio is more than a collection of assets. It's a path to your future. Visit PPACPrivate.com.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are higher in the wake of yesterday's sell-off, which saw the S&P 500 drop more than 4% and the Nasdaq plunge over 5%. Carol Schlieff, Deputy Chief Investment Officer at BMO Family Office, says it may be startling, but we should keep it in perspective.
I know that the down days are scary, but I watched 1987 happen. That was 23% in a day, and the year still closed up.
Carol Schlieff at BMO Family Office says next week's Fed meeting will be crucial for market sentiment.
Well, the sell-off, Karen, spared virtually no corner of equity markets, and it also cost America's richest billionaires dearly. We get more on that from Bloomberg's Doug Krisner.
Jeff Bezos suffered the biggest hit. Data from the Bloomberg Billionaires Index show his wealth plunged by $9.8 billion. Elon Musk's net worth fell by $8.4 billion. And the fortunes of Mark Zuckerberg, Larry Page, Sergey Brin, and Steve Ballmer all declined by more than $4 billion. In total, the fortunes of America's richest tumbled by $93 billion. You know, just last month, the same group lost $78 billion in a day after an eight-minute speech from Fed Chair Jay Powell. In New York, I'm Doug Krisner, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Doug, thank you. In the UK, there's some slightly positive news on inflation. Prices have gone down slightly, easing off the highest rate in four decades. Today's consumer price index rose at an annual rate of 9.9%. That's a drop from 10.1% in July.
Well, the bigger story in England, of course, Karen, centers on Queen Elizabeth II. Her coffin is at Buckingham Palace now. It will soon be taken to Westminster Hall, where it will lie in state for 4 days until her funeral Monday. The UK Army is helping police and London authorities get ready for the event. London Mayor Sadiq Khan says it is a massive job.
We will have almost 300 world leaders and their teams and entourages. I don't think our city's ever seen the sort of presence we're going to see over the next few days. If you think about the London Marathon, the Carnival, previous royal weddings, the Olympics, it's all that in one.
London Mayor Sadiq Khan says rail companies have announced extra service as thousands of mourners head into the city.
Well, Nathan, back here in the U.S., a strike set for tomorrow threatens to hit supply chains hard. It could prevent railroads from transporting farm products and other key goods and cost the U.S. economy $2 billion a day. President Biden is personally trying to break the logjam between railroads and labor unions. Labor Secretary Marty Walsh will meet with railroad and union representatives today. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, 64 degrees in Central Park. Still dealing with that water main break in Morristown. It's got southbound 202 closed at Henry Street. More coming up in traffic. First, Michael Barr with what else is going on in New York and around the world. Michael?
Nathan, thank you very much. Former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo filed an ethics complaint against State Attorney General Letitia James about the way she handled a sexual harassment investigation that led to his resignation last year. Cuomo questioned the accuracy and credibility of the investigation's findings, alleging James, a fellow Democrat, used the probe to tarnish him and further her own political interests. The final primaries for 2022 ended with voters in Republican races choosing between moderates and far-right candidates. In the New Hampshire U.S. House race, former Trump White House aide Caroline Leavitt beat out fellow Trump administration official Matt Maurer with 34.6% of the vote. She will face Democrat Chris Pappas in November. In the race for governor of New Hampshire, Democratic nominee Dr. Tom Sherman, who ran uncontested, will challenge GOP incumbent Chris Sununu, who won his primary with nearly 79% of the vote. In Rhode Island, Governor Dan McKee won the Democratic gubernatorial primary Tuesday. He thanked his supporters.
The world is going to change tonight for Rhode Island. It did for us. And now we're going to take full advantage of it. Thank you so much.
Governor McKee will face Republican Ashley Kallas in November. Ukrainian forces have shown a remarkable ability to take advantage of opportunities that present themselves on the battlefield. That's according to Pentagon spokesman Brigadier General Pat Ryder.
We've seen a number of Russian forces, especially in the northeast, in the Kharkiv region, cross over the border back into Russia as they've retreated from the Ukrainian counteroffensive.
General Ryder says based on the abilities demonstrated by the Ukrainians in the field, it came as no surprise. Former independent counsel Ken Starr, who led the investigation into Bill Clinton's affair with Monica Lewinsky, has died in Houston. He died after complications from surgery. Ken Starr was 76. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. 5:35 on Wall Street. John Stashower has a Bloomberg Sports update.
Nathan, Yankees and Red Sox, first of a mini two-game series in Boston where there are a lot of empty seats. The Sox are, after all, in last place, but quite a game. Boston had three different leads. Yanks kept coming back to tie. Both teams hit three home runs, and the game was tied at four. 10th inning.
The 1-1 line. There's a base hit to right center field. In the alley, he'll go all the way to the wall. Canapalapa scores. Judge scores. And the throw home is late. A three-run score. Florial scores. It is a bases-clearing three-run double for Gleyber Torres.
On WFAN, Sox got two back. Bottom of the 10th, Yanks held on to win 7-6. The Yankee home run for Marwin Gonzalez and two solo shots for Aaron Judge. Sixth inning off Nick Pivetta. That tied the game at three. Eighth inning off Garrett Whitlock to tie the game at four. That one left Fenway, landed on Lens down street. So Judge took a big step towards Roger Maris. 19 games left. He's at 57 homers. 20 more than anyone else in the majors. This was supposed to be the easy part of the Mets schedule, but against Washington, Pittsburgh, Miami, and now the Cubs, the Mets just 4-6 in their last 10 games at Citi Field. They had only four hits. They lost 4-1 as Adrian Sampson outpitched Jacob DeGrom. Atlanta won. The Braves are only a half game behind. NFL, two big week one injuries, both perhaps not as serious as feared. Dallas QB Dak Prescott could be back in a month from his injured hand. Pittsburgh's T.J. Watt, torn pec muscle, but he might return in 6 weeks. Denver coach Nathaniel Hackett now admits he should not have tried a failed game-winning 64-yard field goal in the loss Monday night in Seattle. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Thank you, John. 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report. Here's Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Related Companies has landed new tenants at 50 Hudson Yards ahead of its opening later this year. The $3.8 billion skyscraper counts Meta Platforms as a major tenant. It has new and expanded leases with companies including a Truist Financial Business, Vista Equity Partners, and ServiceNow. Uber has agreed to pay New Jersey $100 million in back taxes. The state has said the ride-hailing company misclassified drivers as independent contractors. The settlement appears to be a retreat from the company's claim that its drivers should not be classified as employees. About 50,000 people who left New York City for Connecticut during the pandemic are staying put despite calls by big banks and other Manhattan employers to bring workers back to the office. Governor Ned Lamont says for now there's been no sign of a major exodus of transplants from his state. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Thanks, Ed. 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potisk on KNX in Los Angeles. We're talking about a report that Paramount Global is considering merging its Showtime streaming service into Paramount Plus.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Starbucks is investing an additional $450 million to revamp its stores.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that Chicagoland consumer inflation is up 8.8% year over year in August. And that's a faster pace than the national rate.
I'm Stephen Carroll on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We've been reporting on a slight easing of inflation in the UK ahead of next week's Bank of England decision.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting General Motors' self-driving car unit is developing its own computer chips.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It's 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. Russian President Vladimir Putin told a gathering last week that his country had not lost anything and will not lose anything in the Ukraine war. He may be less certain of victory today. An offensive by Ukraine's armed forces has made spectacular progress, reversing gains that took Russia months to achieve. Whatever happens next, there's no question that the charge has been a major strategic and operational defeat for the Kremlin. Allied nations must help Ukraine make the most of it by accelerating weapons deliveries and holding the line on trade and sanctions. Of course, Putin isn't defeated yet, but however the conflict unfolds from here, all wars end at the negotiating table. The West should ensure that Ukraine is in a strong position when it gets there. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPINGO on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
Listen for Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPINGO. Futures moving higher this morning. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, sunny, less humid today. Highs in the low 80s. Going to be a nice end of the week, actually, with abundant sunshine tomorrow and Friday, both days in the upper 70s. Right now, 64 in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures rallying this morning after shares had their biggest drop in more than 2 years yesterday. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 19 points. Dow futures up 118. NASDAQ futures up 65. The DAX in Germany is down 0.33%. 10-year Treasury down 7/32nds. Yield 3.43%. The yield on the 2-year, 3.77%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.2% or 16 cents at $87.48 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.2% or $2.80 at $17.14.60 an ounce. The euro is at 1.0005 against the dollar. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. Queen Elizabeth II's coffin will lie in state for 4 days from this afternoon in London. It comes amid warnings that members of the public wishing to attend, pay their respects at Westminster Hall, could face up to a 30-hour wait. The final primaries for 2022 are over. In the New Hampshire U.S. House race, former Trump White House aide Caroline Leavitt beat out fellow Trump administration official Matt Maurer with 34.6% of the vote. She will face Democrat Chris Pappas in November. Rhode Island Democratic Governor Dan McKee faces off against Republican Ashley Callis in the fall. In baseball, the Yankees beat the Red Sox 7-6 in 10 innings. New York's Aaron Judge hit 2 homers to reach 57. The Mets lost. The Orioles beat the Nationals 4-3. The A's and Giants lost. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. We're coming up to 5:49 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. Want to get more now on the hotter than expected read on consumer prices we saw yesterday and the market reaction. Joining us now, Drew Mattis, Chief Market Strategist at MetLife Investment Management. Drew, good morning. 4.3% drop for the S&P 500 after the CPI print. Did the route match what we got in the data?
It did and it didn't. What people are responding to is not necessarily that we're going to go, the Fed's going to go 75 next week versus 50, but the fact that if they go 75 next week, it means that they really can't drop down to 25 the meeting after that. They have to probably drop down to 50 if they think it's possible, and then they can drop down again to a 25. So it actually didn't add just 25 basis points of rate hikes to the whole expectations, but rather something closer to 100 basis points of expectations.
100 basis points of expectations over the next 2 meetings, or could we see 100 basis points next week?
Well, 100 basis point move next week would probably send the wrong signal for the Fed. If they're thinking about you know, we need to contain inflation, but we need to make sure people understand that we aren't just trying to rush to a recession. Then, you know, 75 sends that signal because it's a continuation of what they've done previously. Whereas if they went to 100, then people would begin to think, is the next meeting 125, 150? You know, where does it end?
What is the risk for a recession now? Is it baked in at this point, and how long does it last?
I mean, our baseline view is that there will be a recession next year, and it will not be one we'll be debating about. You'll know it when you see it. I think that the risk of recession is growing because as much as inflation is something you want to get under control, we have to remember that, you know, if the Fed wants to get inflation under control, or the U.S. government wanted to get inflation under control, you can just shut the economy down, right? That is what we learned from the pandemic. Inflation is containable if you're aggressive enough. However, it comes with a cost. And so, you know, for the Fed, the idea is to actually contain inflation with the lowest cost possible. And I think, you know, going 75 next week, when you already have housing in a pretty bad situation, when there are hints that, you know, maybe something's not entirely right with the consumer, you know, maybe we're rushing into a place instead of just letting things play out a little bit. All those rate hikes we've seen, we haven't seen the full impact from yet.
Are we seeing higher inflation expectations getting baked into this market? And is the Fed going to be able at some point to get to that 2% inflation target, or is the target going to have to change?
Well, quite frankly, when they target expectations, what they're targeting is pretty much gas and food prices, because that's what sets consumer expectations for inflation, because that's what you and I buy frequently and repetitively. So, you know, every week I know I have to go to the gas station. I know roughly how much it costs, and I go the next week, it costs more. I understand there's inflation in the economy. I think the Fed needs to back off from looking at inflation expectations from consumers and look more at whether people in financial markets are asking to be compensated for inflation. And there, the data is a lot more mixed in terms of, whether or not the Fed's contained inflation. In fact, you could argue that the Fed never lost containment of inflation expectations from a professional inflation trader standpoint.
We're getting producer prices. The last read on inflation before next week's meeting. Is the final print on inflation going to make any difference for what the Fed decides next week?
No, I think the only thing that can really make a difference at this point, and it would have to be something truly spectacular, almost so spectacular that you might not believe it if you saw it, would be something really bad in retail sales. It's not what we're expecting, but I think that could maybe push them back down to the 50 level if you got something that was both bad and credible.
So in our last minute here, Drew, what about the effect of the rout we saw yesterday on financial conditions? Does that make any difference for central bankers?
I think it should make a difference to central bankers. I think it's telling you that, you know, as much as everyone wants to see inflation contained, that there is a cost to be paid for containing inflation. And I think that's important to remember is, you know, it's about containing inflation over a certain time frame at the lowest cost possible. It's not just about containing inflation, because that's easy, actually.
Thanks, Drew. Great having you on with us this morning. Drew Mattis, Chief Market Strategist at MetLife Investment Management. Karen?
Nathan, it is 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. It is brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. And now to a legal story we're watching this morning. In his first public comments since the Supreme Court eliminated the constitutional right to abortion, Chief Justice John Roberts expressed concern that criticism of the Supreme Court over controversial decisions has veered into attacks on its legitimacy as an institution. Polls since that decision have shown that the public's confidence in the court is at its lowest in modern times. For more, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks to constitutional law scholar Harold Krent, a professor at the Chicago Kent College of Law.
Polls do show that public confidence in the court is at an all-time low. So should the Chief Justice be concerned about people questioning the court's legitimacy?
The Chief Justice should be concerned about the legitimacy of the court, and I believe that he's generally concerned about it, and he has staked much of his reputation as Chief Justice on upholding the legitimacy of the court, but I think he is also partly to blame for the dip in court popularity and for the faith in the court as well.
His vote carries no more weight than any of the other justices. Explain why you think he's partly to blame for the dip in confidence in the court.
Well, there are a number of things that the court has done, and obviously not all of his doing. Every time there is an era of politicization, people look at the court and say it's more political because people see rifts all the time. And, of course, he can't do anything about the rifts between the conservatives and the liberals. But in many cases, he has seemingly tipped the court by trying to take cases that they don't have to take in order to reach certain principles, by not being consistent in methodology. And those types of moves that he probably can control undermine the legitimacy of the court. And of course, the most in everybody's mind is the abortion case. He would have upheld Roe versus Wade, but limited it. He couldn't control the court, and the court pushed it back. And there's other cases where precedents seem to be willy-nilly transcended by the court because the court wants to basically put their own stamp on the law and not be concerned with reliance interests, and not be concerned with looking like an incremental court.
You mentioned precedents, and the court seems to be changing the law, not respecting precedent. And the Chief Justice was in the majority in the opinions that struck down New York's 100-year-old gun law, the case limiting the EPA's ability to address climate change, the cases breaking down the wall between church and states, voting rights cases. He's in the majority in all those cases.
He is, and those cases and others, I think, suggest quite clearly that the court is concerned with, again, having their moment in history as opposed to being conservative in the old-fashioned sense of moving incrementally, of moving carefully. And I'll just give you one example of the Chief Justice as well. He has tried to impose a robust view of a unitary or strong chief executive under Article 2 of our Constitution on the country. And he's done so in the face not only of precedent, but in the face of even history, because the first Congress created many structures that were not unitary.
And that's Harold Krent, a professor at the Chicago Kent College of Law, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grosso. Catch more of that interview, plus analysis of the latest legal news, by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time or subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. Futures this morning are on the rise. S&P futures up about 18 points. Dow futures, they're up 107, and NASDAQ futures up 59. And still ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak, a check on the business headlines and all the news you need to start your day. And this is Bloomberg.